Hey Coach, I can't wait to share this amazing business with you. Kind Cotton is a small clothing company started by a former kindergarten teacher and her husband to help increase children's access to books. For every item purchased, they donate a book to a child. To date, they have donated over 174,000 books. All of their items are unique and you'll find so many t-shirts, hoodies, and fun, meaningful accessories too. They make great gifts. I purchased the Inclusive Books tote bag as a Christmas present, and my friend loved it. Head to kindcotton.com and check out their website full of beautiful, kind messages for yourself or for a friend. Welcome to Instructional Coaching with Ms. V, where we believe that every teacher deserves a coach, and every coach does too. I'm Chrissy Beltran, an elementary teacher who became a coach, and I had to create my own coaching program that worked. Now I teach coaches how to design their coaching programs, build a school-wide action plan, and use differentiated strategies to support teachers. Plus, I've got a special spot in my heart for literacy coaches. Now let's dig into the episode. Hey, Coach, and welcome to episode 220 of Instructional Coaching with Ms. V. Today's episode is about instructional coaching lessons we've learned from Ted Lasso with my friend Arthur Aguirre. This is part of our Loving Your Work with a Really Strong Coaching Mindset series. This is actually, I think, the last episode, right? Yeah, the last episode in that series. Next week, we are starting a new mini series in March. But this has been a really great series because I love trying to help coaches enjoy their work more. It's really important. Arthur is going to join us again today on the podcast. He was a guest in season 4 when he chatted with me about better coaching conversations in episode 139. And now he's going to spend a lovely half hour with us talking about lessons learned from Ted Lasso. So where did this episode come from? And will you still enjoy it if you haven't seen Ted Lasso? The short answer for this is came from the survey that I sent out to coaches. And yes, you will still love it, but I'll go into that more. This topic idea came from someone who filled out the survey, turned it in, and it said, and the question, who would you like to hear from about instructional coaching? She wrote, I would love to hear from Ted Lasso. And when I read it, I was like, okay, that's funny. You know, that's funny because he's a fictional character played by Jason Sudeikis, right? And I loved it. We watched Ted Lasso, my husband and I did, and you know, I cried and laughed, and it was great theory. And the more I was thinking about it, I was like, well, I can't have, obviously, Ted Lasso on the podcast. And I don't think Jason Sudeikis would accept a request to speak to me about coaching. But what I can do is talk about what we've learned from Ted Lasso. And so whenever I was thinking about that, the perfect person came to mind, which is Arthur, because Arthur, I know, loved Ted Lasso as well. And he actually had a podcast about leadership lessons learned from watching TV and movies. And I was a guest on that podcast. I talked about Monsters University and we talked about leadership lessons that I learned from Monsters University. And it was really fun. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. This is a match made in heaven. And then the second part of my question was, will you enjoy this episode if you haven't seen Ted Lasso? Yes, you will. You will get so much information out of it about great coaching and loving your work as a coach, because Ted Lasso is like a coaching, he's just a gold mine. Everything he says is good. Everything he says is golden. And it's amazing. So that even though we are going to be shoddy impersonators of Ted Lasso, we will be able to express to you all the cool stuff you can learn from this kind of coaching style. And if you haven't watched it, I do recommend that you do. It is a good show. It warms your heart, even when it makes you sad and makes you cry. It's a really beautiful show. So the premise of Ted Lasso is that he is an American football coach, college football coach, who is hired to go to the UK, to go to England and to coach football over there, which is obviously what we usually call soccer. I say we may, you know, in America, United States. So he goes to coach soccer, but he knows nothing about it. And so he is actually not equipped to coach this sport at all. But he coaches with heart. And so much of the joy that he has, it makes a difference in everybody's life. And you can see the impact that it has on his team. Let's see if I'm brave enough to do this. I actually looked up with ChatGPT. I said, if Ted Lasso was an instructional coach at a school, how would he introduce himself? And so I'm going to read you what it said, but I want you to remember that I grew up outside of Dallas, Texas. And Ted Lasso has a kind of a Southern accent. And I can as well when I'm around people who have a Southern, you know, you slip back into that accent where, you know, not that I'm trying not to do it. I just don't, it just comes out more whenever I'm with certain people in my life. And so I'm going to read it with my best accent and we will see how it goes. And you have to promise not to laugh at me, or if you do laugh at me, that you never tell me about it, because it's okay to laugh, but it's not okay to hurt my feelings. Okay, so here we go. This is what he said. This is what he would say. And I think we pretty much just took his introduction and kind of like jazzed it up for instructional coaching. Well, howdy there, team. My name's Ted Lasso, and I'm just tickled pink to be your new instructional coach. Now, I'll be honest with you. I don't know much about teaching calculus, writing persuasive essays, or how to wrangle 30 teenagers in a love of Shakespeare. But what I do know is that I'm here to help you be the best dang educator you can be. My job's simple. I'm your cheerleader, your problem solver, and sometimes just the fella who'll sit and listen when the copier is eating the last of your patience. I believe that every single one of you has something special to bring out in these kiddos, and I'm here to help you find it, refine it, and share it. Now, I might throw out some wacky ideas like how to make professional development more fun than waiting in line at the DMV, but I promise you, my heart's always in the right place. We're a team now, and there's nothing more powerful than a group of folks who've got each other's backs. So let's get to work, let's have some fun, and let's make this the kind of school year folks write inspiring teacher memoirs about. Now, I did mess up on the word persuasive, and if you laughed at that, that's okay. We're going to welcome Arthur to the podcast now. So welcome, Arthur, to the podcast today, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I was so excited for you when I got your email, especially given the topic. I'm a huge Ted Lasso fan. I'm a little leery about the new season that they've like greenlit without, I think it's without Jason Sudeikis.
Okay, yeah.
As far as I know, I should have looked that up before we started, but I am a huge Ted Lasso fan, so I was just ecstatic when you asked me to do this.
Yeah, it's such a good show for this podcast to talk about. And it was, you know, I mentioned in the introduction, but it's somebody requested that I interview him for the podcast. And I was like, oh, that sounds really cute, but how on earth would I do it? So we're going to get this as close as I could get.
I thought about shaving my beard and just doing a mustache, but I don't think my wife would be very happy with me.
Oh, man. So disappointed.
I know.
Yeah, but I do love, if you can't see it, but if someday this will wind up on YouTube and you'll be able to see it if you watch it, where Arthur uses his background for his Zoom call. It's the locker room from the team. So that's really cool.
Yeah, before I've done some with some friends and I have like the office background or something. Okay. And I was like, wait a minute, I bet you I could find something before we get started.
Yeah, it's perfect. All right. So as a quick introduction, I would love to hear about a few things from you. Who do you help and how do you spend most of your time and energy at work?
Yeah, no problem. So it's funny that you asked that question, because I've had a little bit of like, you know, I'm about to turn 40 this year. And so I've been a little bit of a crossroads and trying to think about like what my purpose is. And one of the things that I came to, I guess the conclusion is it's less about what I'm doing and what I want to do. And it came down to just helping people. And so I like helping people in a couple of ways. One, I'm a professor in leadership and communication. I love teaching. It is why I got my PhD. It's why I became a professor. I just love teaching folks new things. I love seeing the aha moments when things start clicking with people. And I use media a lot in my courses. And so I've used Ted Lasso before. I've used The Bear before. I've used a number of different shows to help folks make those kinds of connections. And then the other job I have is I'm a mortgage loan officer. And so I like helping people in that way, where it's a little bit more of a like a tangible thing that you can see, folks who are, you know, finally making the big jump to like buy their house. And I know, especially in today's economy and the way things are right now, it's not easy for everyone to do that. So I love that I get to be a part of that, or even folks who are just looking to refinance. So that is kind of how I help people. And I'm forgetting the second. Oh, how I spend my time and energy.
Yeah.
So outside of those two jobs, although those keep me pretty busy, I also, you know, spend my time and energy with my wife. We're going on we're about a year and a half married now. And spending time with my family. Back in 2018, I lost my father, and it kind of line things up for me in terms of what is most important to me, and spending time with my family is just incredibly important. I don't have any kids of my own, but I have tons of nieces and nephews. And a lot of them are getting into that really fun, like, teenage years where we can, like, connect on a different level than when they were children, like much younger children. And so I spend a lot of time and energy with them.
Yeah, I love
that. And this kind of blends until I know we have another question coming up.
Okay, great. Yeah.
But I have ADHD. And so I look for different ways to kind of turn my brain off, where like kind of like lower the static I hear most of the time. And I found something that does that. And I've been doing this for years. Whenever I just need to like turn my brain off, I play something just like fun in background, on like background noise on my iPad, whether it's a movie or a TV show. And I play Madden, the video game, on my PlayStation
okay.
at the same time. And for whatever reason, it just like calms me like you would not believe.
How interesting. Yeah. Cause yeah. I think for me, that would, I don't like to hear two sources of electronics at the same time.
Oh, I mute the game. Oh,
okay, you have
it. I'm the same way.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your brain, I feel like my brain is like flipping back and forth. I can't decide.
I think a few years ago, my wife, before we got married, had like come to visit me, and she walks in and like, I have the video game going on the TV. I have my iPad going on next to me, and it was like a break. So I was like looking at my phone. Okay. She's like, what are you doing? You can't be doing all, like, she just made her nervous watching me.
Yeah, for sure. Like I've seen that happen before. My husband's a little bit like that. You know, Bernie.
Oh, I know.
Like that. It's always like, always got stuff going on. I'm like, hey, take it down a notch.
Please.
It's your hobby that you love. Is it Madden? Is that your hobby?
Yes, it's Madden. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's a good one. My brothers used to love to play all those games. It was really cool.
Yeah, it's like the one thing that's stuck for years now.
Yeah. Yeah, that you held on to. Is that the only game you play now?
That's you. I mean, there's a few other ones I might get into, but in terms of other hobbies, I don't know if we're getting into that question already.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, I don't know if I just like steamrolled us into it.
No, you're good. Perfect. Perfect timing.
So I mentioned that one right now, but the other thing, I love watching movies and TV shows in general, like not when I'm playing Madden. I like them, you know, anytime, especially. I think Apple does a really good job with some of their programming. I love Shrinking. Shrinking has been one of my favorites for a while. On a personal level, my dad also had Parkinson's, so I love being able to see how they're doing that. I haven't started the new season of Severance yet, but I'm looking forward to rewatching the first one so I can get into the second.
That's what I did last week.
Yeah.
So good. And the first episode is good. They're doing it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's definitely a hobby. I've been strength training now for a few years. It started as powerlifting, and now it's more of just, it's become more than just like a casual thing. Like now that life's a little bit more busy, I have to be more intentional, because if I just don't do it, I'm just all out of whack. Like
yeah.
Mentally, emotionally, everything. So that's become a big hobby of mine. And I've been trying to make a more concerted effort since last year to read more. It hasn't been all that successful. you know, I'll get in. I think I'm in the middle of like two different, radically different books right now. And I need to just finish one and like get completely into the next. So
yeah.
Those are some of the hobbies I've been getting into.
You don't have one book playing audiobook while you're reading another book?
And you know what's strange? I've tried so hard to get into audiobooks because I listen to podcasts all the time.
Right.
And I don't know what it is about my brain that just will not let me do it.
Interesting. Yeah. For years, those were like the books. Whenever my kids were super little, that was pretty much what I read. Because as soon as I cracked a book, I was like I just fell right to sleep. I was always like sleep deprived. So audiobooks were like my lifeline. And I plow through a bunch of them. But I do appreciate, if I want to read a book that I think is going to be really good, I'm going to read the paper book. I want a book in my hands. I don't want to do audiobook for really good stuff. So then it takes me longer to get through those, obviously. But yeah, it's a good priority to try to squeeze that in. But I know you're busy. I've just kind of made it my one of the focuses that I want to, you know, make sure I share with people this year is about hobbies that people do, because like this series is about loving your work as a coach. But if you don't make time for things that you enjoy, I don't think you can love your work. Like it demands so much of you that if you don't make time on your own for things that you're enjoying, I don't feel like you can really love your job. You don't have as much to give, you know?
Yeah.
So
right. you have to fill your cup in order to be able to continue to fill others. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm hoping to, you know, just share ideas with people so they can think about, you know, a hobby doesn't have to be anything special. It's just something you like to do that you do.
I think we lose sight of how important it is for that hobby to like there's a certain itch that you're scratching when you do a hobby, even if it's something that you're not good at.
Yeah.
You know, for a while I was getting into drawing and they were not good. It was just like a fun process of like, and using a part of my brain I don't normally use.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard a quote that I really like, and it's, sucking at something is the first step to being really good at something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it makes sense because you can't, you know, you can get better at your hobby and you can, you may enjoy it more when you're better at it, but you get started. You have to start. And you might not be great at it. That's okay. If you enjoy it, just keep at it.
You know, one of the big lessons that I try to in workshops or in classrooms, that I like to take some time out to talk about is failure. Cause I think we've been conditioned because of like the school system that failure is just such a large impactful thing that could, you know, just derail your entire life.
It's not an option. Like, Failure is not an option. Like that's the
exactly name
of the book that we all had to read that our all principles made you read, right? We all had to read,
And at the university level, they tell us like, I think, and this may have changed. I don't know. I've been doing this for a while now, but if you get an F on your transcripts, it takes like three A's just to get you to baseline again. Yeah. And so it just feels like this big detriment, but you can't get good at something until you fail, right? Like inventors are going to fail a number of times before they figure out what works. You know, musicians write really crappy songs until they write a really good one.
Yeah.
But it takes that first step of trying and failing before you get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that you're sharing a little bit of Ted Lasso expertise already. So how about we dig into the show here? If you want to give us, could you give us a brief summary of Ted Lasso, of the show?
So, I mean, this is absolutely going to have some spoilers, I am sure. So if you're listening to this, I'm assuming that some folks have already watched Ted Lasso. But I guess the cleaner version is that there is a college football coach who gets hired to become the soccer coach for AFC Richmond. So he moves all the way over there to the UK and starts coaching. But with a lot of drama around his hiring and the intent for why he was brought there. I can leave it like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't want to give that part away either, but it is important, and it's uncovered in the first few episodes, I feel like, but he's a fish out of water for sure, and his personality is just so incredible and unique and fantastic, and really gives us some things to aspire to, I think, and he's just highly quotable. So, do you have a favorite Ted Lasso quote? Something that you really love?
So there's a couple of them, and they kind of bleed into like the lessons we're trying to pull from.
Okay.
But one of them that he says to Rebecca, he says, you know, I think that if you care about someone and you got a little love in your heart, there ain't nothing you can't get through together.
Okay.
I think that's really impactful. I think especially with how there's just so much conflict with folks, you know, I think there are a lot of sensitive issues that are going on and being talked about, of course, in society. But I do think if you focus on like the care that you have for one another, it can go a long way in making progress and kind of healing some of those relationships. Mm-hmm. And the one that really just resonates with me the most, he says, success is not about the wins and losses. It's about helping these young fellas be the best versions of themselves on and off the field.
Yeah, I wrote that one down too. That was a good one. And that's, as a coach, that's, you know, we are told all the time as an instructional coach that, you know, look at your data. I can tell. I was talking to a board member from another district not long ago, and I said, you know, I can't tell you if a school is a good school or not by looking at some papers. I need to go see. I need to see what's happening. And she goes, oh, no, not for me. It's all about the data. It's all about the data. I said, that data can tell you what happened on that day, but it does not tell you why it happened.
Yeah.
And that is, to me, like you have to go see people in action. You have to see teaching and learning to know if the school is being successful. Do you want your kid there just because they have good test scores? Maybe not. And so that, you know, success, we're very concerned with pass and fail in schools. We're very concerned with, you know, we get our data back at the end of the year from the state, and it just, you know, we're so happy if they did well, and we're just destroyed if they didn't. And
right.
You know, there are consequences for that. So obviously it's important, right? Because there are consequences about that data that we didn't get to pick. But, you know, did you help your teachers become something? Did you help them grow? Did you help the kid? Are the kids different than they were before? And all those intangible things, those are the successes that we can look at, that it's easy to forget about those because we're so overwhelmed with, did they do it or not? Did they reach that score or not? You know, it's just done. So I really like that one. I love that one a lot.
And you know, there's a great clip, and I think it's still on YouTube, but I use it in my my research class from John Oliver, Last Week Tonight. And he talks about, I mean, you can grab any data and make whatever argument you want with it, you know, and if it doesn't fit your narrative, you can kind of skew and look for a different set of data. But if you are only looking at the data, you're missing like a large piece of that puzzle.
Yes, you have to see the picture. It paints the picture of the data for you. The
Right.
data is just these raw numbers. And then whenever you look and see what's going on, that tells you what's really happening. And I feel like, and that explains the data for you, you know, and
Right.
you can say, ah, this is what the real situation is. So I think that was, I really like that, looking for the intangibles and the successes in people and not, and the best versions of themselves. The other one that I wrote down was also about success. He said, success is doing the absolute best you can with what you've got. And I love that so much because we're all looking for the same success and we all want it to look the same in terms of schools and kids and learning and teaching. And that is not, we did not all start out with the same stuff,
No.
you know? And so whenever people are like, well, school should be run like a business. Well, where are we getting the materials? These
Right.
are people. We're not receiving shipments of, you know, aluminum to make pipes here. These are people and they are all different. And you are working with what you have in your school. So if you did the best that you could have possibly done with what you've got, that has to be your measure of success. And I really love that.
Yeah, you know, I was fortunate the last semester I was teaching both our introduction to leadership course for our undergraduate students, and I don't teach that class often, but it is folks who are like 18, 19 years old, so it is their first college class. You know, we're in El Paso, so for some folks this is their first class in English potentially. And on the other end, I'm teaching my night class to, you know, senior level military officials in a graduate course. And so it's nice to go back and talk to my undergrads and kind of get back to the basics for myself. And one of the chapters we were covering was talking about some of the traits of leadership of a good leader. And one of them that just like stuck out to me, and you kind of forget about it, is being resourceful and knowing like, what do you have? What are people's strengths and weaknesses? And how can you take advantage of that and put them in positions to succeed?
Yeah, I like that. And that actually brings me to one of the lessons that that I feel like we can learn from Ted Lasso if we want to dig into those. He talks about a lot of it is about like knowing people, you know, knowing who your people are. And so he talks about be curious, not judgmental, which he says he references Walt Whitman. There's a scene where he's playing a game. He's challenged to like a game of darts and with kind of like a villain in the show, the guy who serves as a villain. And you know, that people don't know what to expect from him because they didn't bother to ask. And so he talks about how, you know, we need to get to know people. We cannot, we don't pass judgment. We pass judgment on people so often that we don't allow ourselves to get to know people. He said, another one that he said was, all people are different people.
I have
I love
that one
that one.
too, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. All people are different people because we might look at people, you know, let's say in teaching, we say, oh, that's a new teacher. They're going to be eager to learn. Oh, that's a veteran teacher. They're going to be set in their ways. Oh, that, you know, we put people in these categories. And really, we need to get to know each person individually and dig beyond whatever characteristics or qualifiers we have that, you know, make us think that we know who they are.
Yeah, you know, we one of the, I mean, almost regardless of which workshop I'm giving or what speech I'm giving, I do a little bit on communication, and I show this graph of people talking, or it's a model, it's a the interactive model of communication. And one of the things I love talking about is that right above each person that's speaking is something called your field of experience. And so I ask folks what that is, and essentially it is anything you've ever experienced in your entire life, like movies you watched, TV shows you watched, the friends you had when you were a kid, how you were raised, what church you went to, all of those things. And so it makes something as simple as like, which do you prefer, Coke or Pepsi? Like for some folks, like that is a big deal, right? And it's like, it is ingrained in you from your, that's what your mom or your dad drank or whatever it might be. And so even if something as small as that, which beverage you prefer, then you can start seeing why we're so different on so many different levels and why conflict and communication happens. And people lose sight of that. They just make this assumption that the person should be operating the way that they themselves are thinking. And you already put that person in this box that already, you know, does not fit them. Right. And so that's why I wrote that quote down as well, that all people are different people, because I think we need to take some time. And I know that's not something a lot of folks, that's not a resource that a lot of us have, but taking that time to get to know your people, to see what those strengths and those potential areas of improvement are.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I like that you brought up the conflict thing there too, because we are, as a coach, you are working with teachers in teams at times, you know, in groups. There's like history there. Half the time you don't even know it, you know, like, I mean, sometimes you hear the stories of what happened before you got there. And it's just like, what? And nobody's done anything about this. Like, there was like a rivalry of like 30 years that these people had worked in the same grade level. And it was everybody knew it. It was like, that was just how they are. And it was ugly, and that I jumped into, you know. I'm like, well, no wonder this is such a dysfunctional group, you know. There's like history here. And so whenever you're dealing with conflict like that, you know, it can be, it is hard and it is exhausting. And the way to get to know people, or the way to get to help people work together, is by getting to know them. And we can't give up on people, even though it can be so frustrating. You know, there are scenes in Ted Lasso where he is communicating with people, sometimes as kindly as he can, honestly, but kindly as he can. And they are just shutting him down and completely disrespecting his role as the coach, because they're like, you don't even know this sport. You don't even know, you have nothing to offer us. And so this team, there are like large amounts of them that are just like, you have nothing to give us, right? But he doesn't give up on these people, even though they are so against him, which is interesting, because I feel like sometimes modern culture is telling us, you know, oh, you do you. And yeah, I mean, just kind of like letting people, just writing them off. And he doesn't do that. He has all these negative interactions with people, but he believes over time that it can get better. So he doesn't let those smaller negative interactions get to him as much.
And I would even argue it's almost like he takes that second to understand, like, I know why you feel this way about
me. Yes.
And that's okay. It'll change.
Yeah. Yeah. He tries to understand their motivations. And whenever we can understand people's motivations, then we can have some empathy with them. One of the things that I do as a coach, whenever I'm working with somebody who is really, really trying my, I am not the most naturally patient person in the world. I've had to earn that the hard way through years of teaching and working with kids and then adults and then my own children, which is a whole other thing. Whenever you're trying to parent a tiny version of yourself, oh, that's a rough one. But whenever I am working with somebody that is just constant, like a brick wall, they're just constantly just coming at me, I try to give them a backstory. And that's kind of weird, because I don't know their actual backstory, but if they're not giving me anything, I got to make it up, because I need something to get me through those interactions and to have patience and to have empathy for them and to try to understand. And so obviously the backstory can evolve once you know more about people. And I can think of one person in particular, I wrote a backstory for them in my brain to help deal with the constant negativity and criticism and just pushing back on everything and I mean downright rudeness sometimes. And so I wrote this backstory for this person, and then over time I actually learned part of their backstory. They shared it with me. I was so surprised that they did open up and share it with me. And it just reminds me of those moments that Ted has, like with Jamie, where Jamie is this player who's used to being the best. He's a cocky little jerk, you know, he's arrogant, but he's very good at what he does. Right. And he doesn't want to be coached, and he doesn't want to be part of a team. He's like, they're holding me back. And, you know, Coach Lasso has to work so hard to interact with this person. And the only thing that gets him through it is just believing that there is something motivating this guy. There is something not right that is keeping him from just, you know, being a human with other people. And over time you learn what his backstory is, and Ted does
right.
it, and it changes their relationship.
Yeah. And I think we don't, just in general, but we're both in the workplace, but even outside of it, don't take that moment to do that. Right. I like using the example of like when we're in a hurry and someone is driving slow, right? We are taking our own urgency and putting it on this person. Like, I can't believe this person is getting in my way. This person has now become an enemy to you for no other reason than you're in a hurry. Yeah. But then, you know, and I don't like using the example, you know, when folks have like the baby on board, like, you know, sticker on the back of their car, because I know that could be helpful letting people know why you might be driving a little more carefully. But even something as simple, you know, we're from El Paso and we have, like, I know a lot of folks get menudo on Sunday morning. And let's say you're driving with that pot of menudo, like all of a sudden you're driving very carefully. And you're like, why is this moron behind me, like honking and getting all upset because I'm going so slow? Don't they know I have this pot in here? You know, but if you flip it back to where you are the person who was in a hurry, you know, it's just hard to make that switch of like why that person might be driving that way.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's a really nice microcosm of like that same mentality when you're trying to lead people.
Yeah.
Right. Trying to understand why someone might be hesitant to do something. Like there's a good chance it's not because they don't understand. They're just worried about making a mistake.
Yeah.
Right. But you don't know that until you start getting to know why they're behaving in the way that they're doing.
That's true. Yeah. And sometimes like you'll get lots of questions. I actually mentioned that in an episode that came out a few weeks ago, where if you get a ton of questions about something new, it can feel like that's resistance. But sometimes they are just like, this is what's happening in my brain, and I'm letting you into what's happening in my brain right now. I don't have a general idea this is going to work.
Right.
And so even if the questions are delivered with anger or frustration, it's not that they're saying, I won't do that. They're saying, I have no idea how to even do that.
Right. So I'll share one of mine.
Yeah, go ahead.
There is an episode, and again, I don't want to know, there's not any spoilers or anything, but one of the players says, my father says I'm in safe hands with you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big lesson that leaders can take, is that your team, whoever you're responsible for, should always feel like you have their best interest in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think one of, I did another podcast a few weeks back, and they asked me what, you know, the hallmark of a good leader. And I said, someone who can create other leaders. And that even means like, I have done such a good job that you have surpassed me and I'm letting you get a different job somewhere else or whatever it might be, or I am pushing you and helping you do that because I want the best for you. Right. And, you know, we see Ted do that all the time, right? We see that, we see him push his team, whatever way makes sense for them, but always with the best intentions for that person on an individual level, and not necessarily just them as a player.
Yeah, that's a good point. And people can tell. There's a quote from Elena Aguilar, who writes a lot about instructional coaching. She says, people don't want to learn from somebody who thinks they suck.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're putting that out there, yeah, people are not interested in learning. And we all have thoughts. You know? We do. We are humans. But we do have to remember these are human beings I'm working with also. And this if this is like they're really trying, like I have to be patient with that. And if we're putting out there that we want to support them and help them grow because that is good for them, then they are more likely to want our support than if we try to like fix whatever's going on.
Right. And going back to the idea of being resourceful and understanding like what their strengths are, what their areas of improvement are. And I think, and then there's two sides of it because, you know, like I said, when I'm teaching this introduction course, I'm picking up some things that I haven't taught in a minute. And I know there's this like belief, like if someone has some weaknesses, you focus and work on those weaknesses. And that definitely can be one approach. But another one can be like, hey, this is not your strong suit. So let's just put you in a different area or put you in a different spot where you can focus on those strengths and we can get someone else on the team to focus on this area that maybe not be your strong suit. Mm-hmm. And that's a completely different approach that some people don't believe in or don't think it's necessary. But you could also just leave that person kind of drowning for a while if you're just insistent on like, here, no, we're going to make this weakness better for you.
Yeah, we used to do that as teachers. You know, there were certain times of year where we would do like little review counts and things. So each of us would take a certain subject or content, a specific thing, and provide like intervention to kids in those areas. And when I was in charge of that as a teacher, I mean, I just took charge of it because somebody had to do it in our grade level. We would kind of delegate responsibilities and I would just ensure that people hopefully had something that would align with their strong suits instead of, you know, there are some teachers that were like, you know what, let's not throw them problem solving. Let's throw that somewhere else. You know, use what you've got, use your resources. And if they have a strength that, you know, well, you're going to do fact fluency, that's what you're going to do. And, you know, you do have to use what they've got and what they're bringing to the table, because it's kind of like they say about kids, whenever principals tell teachers, the parents aren't keeping the good ones at home. They're sending their best, right? That's what teachers. This is what we've got. They are bringing their best skill sets here. Okay. This is what they've got. And so we have to work with what they've got.
One of the other ones I have here is sometimes you have to do the right thing, even if you lose. And I think that is, I'm a firm believer that because leader in whatever industry, right? You know, I'm in education, but I think in any industry, I think too often success from a leader is determined by like how much revenue they're making or whatever it might be, like what lists they're on the top of. And I think too many people see it as it has to be either that or like Ted Lasso focusing on making good people. And I think you can do both at the same time. You know, and that's okay if you have like these, you were just talking about failure, you know, having these smaller setbacks, if it's still the right thing that you're doing, right? And I'm not saying that you should, it's okay if your entire business fails, right? That's definitely not the point either. But I think it's okay to take a loss every so often if it's for the greater good.
Interesting. Yeah, it's something to think about for sure, because you can't control all the factors. And sometimes the best choice isn't the one you would make if you had all the options.
Right. And I think even just from like if you think about it from like teams playing against each other, like talking about sports, like sometimes your team just had a bad day. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've seen that on just like even as an instructor or as an educator, there have been definitely times where like I'm halfway through my lecture and I'm like, this is a snooze fest. I don't know what I was thinking when I put this together. Like, let's just trudge through this thing and then like let them out, because this is not going very well. Right? Like that is my own like loss, and that's okay. And then I learn from it. And the next time I teach that lesson, it's going to be better. And we're kind of getting away from like doing, you know, lose, even if, you know, to do the right thing. But I think the same lesson can be kind of the takeaway here, where sometimes like it's just not going to go your way, and that's all right. Like, yeah. So if that's going to happen, then you should be doing the right thing no matter what.
Yeah, that's a good one. Another one that I wrote down was that, so specifically for instructional coaches, you sometimes coach things you've never taught. And much like Ted Lasso, who is coaching a sport that he has very little knowledge of. And what he does know, he knows about the athleticism. He knows about teamwork. He doesn't even know the rules of the game. He doesn't even know the vernacular. But he knows, you know, how players play games together and win. And he knows how to build a team. And so whenever you're a coach, sometimes, like whenever I first started coaching, I was coaching kinder through fifth, and I only taught third and fourth. So I was like, those little people in kinder and first grade, those are not my favorites, you know? And I really had to become comfortable with learning in those classrooms, observing people who are really good at what they were doing. Because I didn't have that background. Like Ted Lasso says, he goes, heck, you can fill two internets with what I don't know about this sport. And he still believes he has something to offer these people, even though he doesn't know the content.
Right.
Obviously, it's good to know content. I mean, it's helpful and it's important, you know. But if you don't, that doesn't mean you don't have anything to offer. You can learn that over time. You can learn it by watching people who are really good about it and intentionally learning it. But you have all the other things to offer. You know what good teaching looks like. You know what, you know, good lesson planning can look like. You can build teams. You can help people help each other and use your resources well, even if you are not the best resource for maybe what goes into that content lesson.
So it's interesting because I'm using a lot of the examples I pull from some of my workshops here. And I, for those who don't know, I'm very much into the NFL, into football. And so I use a lot of players and coaches as examples, and you don't have to know about football to understand this one, but there is a player named Antonio Gates. And he started in college as a basketball player, wanted to get into the NBA, and I'll give you the short version of it. His agent said, I don't think it's going to work out that way, but there are some NFL scouts who are really interested in you, because Antonio Gates is, I believe, 6'4", is 244 pounds and runs like a 4.5 40, which that's absurd. And so these NFL coaches are like, I can't coach someone to be 6'4", 244 pounds and run a 4.5 40, but I can see talent, right? And I can find some, like kind of like Ted Lasso, like I understand athleticism, I understand the rules of sports to a certain degree, and I can make this work. And I think we should be doing that more often, right? Finding out, again, because you have to get to know your team, finding out what their strengths and weaknesses are, not just when it comes to their job. Another example I like using is if you are, for example, have an accounting department and there's someone on your team who also just happens, you get to find out that they love making reels at home, right? Like just for their own social media. And you're like, hey, you know what? Our social media team or our marketing team, why don't you go work with them every other Friday, right? Like just take that day, work with them, and you get them that opportunity to develop that part of something that really means a lot to them, right? But one, you wouldn't know about that until you get to know them. But two, you have to be willing to allow that to happen, right? You have to be okay with this person not being a part of their normal department for one or two times out of the month or whatever it might be. And it's a very specific example. But I think it can be really beneficial both from a morale standpoint, but also just from like a personnel standpoint and understanding what the way that team member can contribute on a variety of different levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looking at what they have to offer instead of just what maybe their job is at this time. Another thing that I was thinking about, I mean, obviously, so there's a sign that Ted makes that says believe, right? Mm-hmm. Sticks it on the wall. And it actually plays a pretty important role for many episodes. And lots of times in schools, we basically get posters that say believe and get them put on the wall. We have this all the time. We have things like this. Whether you can or you, what do you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Things like
right.
that. Mm-hmm. And then people are like, I believe you can do it. And then you're just left to do it. And so what I like about the way Ted Lasso does this is that he even says belief doesn't just happen because you hang something on the wall. Instead, he kind of manifests the belief. He becomes the belief. And he's like, because I believe, this is what we're going to do. And so that belief is motivating him to coach in a certain way, and it motivates the players to behave in a certain way. And there is action tied to the belief, because I feel like many times we have like wishes, goals, things we would like to happen, but then we don't do any of the actions to make them happen.
Right.
And so he jumps in there and he's like, because we believe, this is how we're going to act. And that shapes and changes the way that they interact with their work.
And I think the other part, I love that. I love that you pulled that out, because I think that's a big through line through most of like the entire show is he is the catalyst, right? He believes. Mm-hmm. And like slowly over time, you start seeing more and more people start joining that crowd of Ted Lasso and Coach Beard, right? It's them too, right? They are the ones who believe.
Coach Beard is the assistant coach. Yeah.
And you slowly, like player by player, start seeing folks jump on board. And I think that's really emblematic of what leadership can look like or should look like, right? Like, even if you don't have all the enthusiasm behind you as you would like, right? And I tell folks all the time, right? Oftentimes, if you're getting put in a leadership position, it's because someone got let go. And so they're looking for someone to come in and spark some change in some way. But that also means that you are a complete outsider, and there's going to be people there who are just going to dig their heels in. It's like, I don't care if it's a good move that you're making. Like, I don't know you. I'm just, like the example you gave, like someone who has 30 years of like conflict ready to go, like they might not be ready to like change directions. And so you have to have enough faith for them. We're like, I believe in this so much. I'm going to, whatever you don't have, I got it. And as soon as you're ready to take off this burden of belief, like I will let you have it and I will be patient until you get there.
Yeah, I like that. Like that sharing the burden of belief.
Yeah.
A good one.
No, because I remember, whether I'm talking to friends or I'm talking to my wife, and I'll hear someone say, like, well, I'm just, you got to have faith. And like, well, I don't have any right now. I'm like, that's okay. I'll have enough of faith in you until you're ready to pick it up on your own. And I think we should be able to do that for one another. And for a lot of folks in a leadership position, like, you need to do that.
Yes, because many of us are very much like, I will believe it when I see it. I will believe when I see that it is possible because something has happened to show me it's possible. And so we have to start doing the work, and then certain people will believe because you believe or because they believe. And then some people have to wait and see. And so if we can start doing the work, we can show that something changes. But if we don't, those people never come around. You know, they have to see that.
They have to see you match that enthusiasm in thought and in word needs to start coming with action as well.
Yes.
And if those things are together and you have that momentum going forward, it's going to happen, mm-hmm. right? It might not be for everyone, right? Depending on how big of a group you're trying to lead, there are almost always going to be some folks who are just, yeah. I'm here to get my paycheck, 8 to 5, whatever it might be, or, you know, 8 to 3:30 or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But I think the folks who can really see that authenticity, because I think that's the other aspect of Ted Lasso that we haven't touched on too much, the fact that he is Ted Lasso all the way through, mm-hmm. right? Whether it is on the yeah. pitch, or whether it is in his office or whatever it might be, like, he is who he is. I think there's like a small moment where you can kind of see him get a little heated with Jamie.
Yeah.
In like the first season.
Yeah. You know what? He was like disappointed in Jamie because mm-hmm. he believed he could be better.
Right.
And so I felt like that, even that was coming from a place of you are better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously you can't yell at your teacher like a coach can yell at their players. But, you know, I did, like, the motivation for that, I understood, you know.
And I think it's also, there's another lesson that I kind of pulled from Ted is that he is always trying to stick up for those who are, like, vulnerable in some way, right? Whether it is, like, the picture of Keeley in the locker room.
Oh, right.
Or, you know, in the second season. And again, I'm not trying to do any spoilers, but he, instead of speaking for one of his players, he allows that player to come and say, hey, like, and even preface it by saying, like, usually if something like that happens to someone like me, this news coverage, like, you're going to cover it no matter what. But I'm going to go ahead and let this player speak on his own behalf. Right. And so I think that ability to always care about those folks, I think that's also kind of why he got so heated with Jamie, because he saw that not only are you just being a not great person to your teammates, but, like, you are really being, you're also doing that to some of the staff who don't deserve that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an expectation of how you treat each other mm-hmm. and that's not okay. Yeah, I like that. The last one that I wrote is maybe not a lesson that is like, well, it's not like all the other positive lessons that we talked about, but this one I thought was really important because he finally gets to a point where some of the things in his personal life and, you know, his upbringing, all of these things, as all of us have, you know, baggage, they start to wear at him, and he is struggling, you know, with some emotional issues and mm-hmm. mental health issues. And he realizes finally, eventually, that he has to take care of himself. But people do realize this once they go through these things. Sometimes we don't do this. We don't try to take care of ourselves before the stuff happens. We wait mm-hmm. until something happens. Mm-hmm. And so, like, Ted is like that perpetually positive person. And that comes at a cost. So sometimes if we are not being thoughtful about ourselves and how we take care of ourselves, and we're just constantly pouring into our work, we're missing something. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like that was a good message to walk away with is, you know, yes, we do need to be the cheerleader and we need to be the supporter. We need to be all these good things, but you are also a person and you need those things for you too. You need people who are going to be your team and, you know, at that level who are going to support you, who are going to listen, you know, if you need to talk to somebody. Those are all things that you have a hobby, you know, those are all things that you can do to help yourself, and you have to help yourself and take care of yourself because nobody else can do it.
Yeah. And then, you know, like I said, I've been strength training for a while. And one thing that one of my coaches, my powerlifting coaches, told me is if you don't take the time to address your mental and physical health, then eventually your physical and mental health will make you take that time out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at some point, like, you that's going to be due. Like, that time is going to be due.
Yeah.
And so it's better if you're doing that proactively.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have another lesson?
Yes, I have one last one as okay. well. And it is just, and again, it's not like a quote or anything, but it's just the idea that everyone matters. You know, I think from the very beginning, one of the trainers, he says his name and remembers it. And you can clearly tell that his predecessor didn't, you know, just from that kid's reaction. And there's little, there's one that always sticks out to me, where Ted's going to go and try to save this event. And he asks Higgins, like, come with me. He's like, you want me to go with me? He goes, yeah, forget the rest. I want the best. And it is just like this small little thing. Like, you didn't have to say that, but you probably made that guy's day that night.
Yeah.
You know, these, he finds these small little moments to let everyone know that they matter. And it doesn't have to be like this big grand gesture, you know, like, I'm just thinking about me personally. If someone like Ted said that to me, I'd be on cloud nine for like a week, you know?
Yeah.
And as he says it with his little like Southern charm or whatever it might be. And I think finding little ways like that to let people know that they matter. You know, one of the things I advocate for in terms of how to communicate as a leader is called invitational leadership communication. And a big part of it is it comes from this idea of invitational rhetoric. And one of the basic tenets is that everyone has imminent value. Right. Like everyone is just, everyone matters. And I think we, you know, I've been saying the same phrase over and over, but we lose sight of that, that because of whatever history of conflict we might have, or because we're tired, or because, you know, what, all these different aspects of life that are going to get in the way, we forget that this is still a person who matters. Mm-hmm. And I think throughout every episode, we see that even if it's folks who are hurting him or being disrespectful to him, he's still tries to find a way to let them know that they matter.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Kind of like in those certain interactions, you have to pull your eyes out of your own brain and see from a different perspective. Because like you talked about with a Menudo, you know, we are so caught up in seeing out of our own eyes. Yeah. And of course we are, you know, that's how we were programmed and made. It's all about survival and you're in the way of my survival. But I think that that's a really good way to think about it, is that everybody matters, and you have to, you sometimes, it takes time, and you have to deliberately think about, well, what are they seeing? What are they feeling? Where are they coming from? And what can I do to lift them up? You know, what would be meaningful to them? And that small thing that he said, just, yeah, it does. It perks that guy right up, because he's like, oh, I'm something to this organization.
Yeah. I think people want to know that they play an integral part of whatever they're doing, you know? And I think there's little small ways that we can do that.
Yeah. Their contributions matter. I like that. Mm-hmm. One time I had our principal made us sit in a circle with each grade level, and each like support staff member was kind of like liaison to a grade level, like would kind of help them, you know, help facilitate certain meetings and would share their concerns with admin and stuff. And so she made us each go around and say one thing that we appreciated about each person at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, many of them were like teaching things that I appreciated, but I remember one person I had to really like look for something, and I did appreciate things about her, but they were hard to like verbalize maybe.
Yeah.
And so then I found one that I sincerely meant, and I shared it with her. And then whenever that person came around and she had been very belligerent throughout the year, whenever she came and had to say something about me, she said, you know what I appreciate is you treat us all with respect as we deserve to be treated.
Good.
And I don't remember what the other people said. Isn't that funny? I don't remember what those other very nice people said. I remember what that person who had not been nice to me said. Because I was like, oh my gosh, I did it. Because it had been, you know, it's very difficult in those moments where you're being attacked sometimes. And I'm not saying you take it, and I'm not saying you, you know, smile and act like everything's fine. But if you can hold your peace and you can be the adult in the room sometimes when other people are not in a good place to be the adult, it can sometimes pay off. Mm-hmm. And that person appreciated that she had been treated with respect, even when she was not always behaving respectfully. And I know that sounds like, well, then why, you know, but she did start to behave respectfully, and she did start to listen to me. And maybe doing that exercise helped her realize that in that moment. Maybe she had to think real hard of something she liked about me. You know what I mean? And that's what she settled on. But then that's what she came up with. And after that, things really it took a turn, you know? And so I feel like if we can hold out, if we can hang in there, even those people that make your job not the place you want to go sometimes, things can change.
Yeah.
But they can change over time. So.
And I have one more I'm going to sneak in.
Yeah, go for it.
Because I feel like, not that they stole it from me, but it's something that I've done for folks who I know who, I have some people that are close to me that their success at work is essentially how they deem they're successful as a person.
Yes.
And again, I won't give any spoilers away. But there's a scene where someone is kind of essentially having that kind of a crisis. So they ask this person's like niece, like, when you think about this person, what do you think of? And it's all these different traits, and it has nothing to do with what his occupation is.
Uh-huh.
And I try to tell folks all the time, like, do the same thing. You know, ask your nieces or nephews or your kids. Because even when I think about someone like you, you know, like, you are so good at what you do, but that wouldn't be the first thing off the top of my head if someone told me, like, what do I think about Chrissy? You know? And I think it's important that we find that purpose in what we do, but it can't be the only thing that we wrap ourselves into, because there are just so, again, going back to that idea of our imminent value, that value isn't only determined by the profession that we have.
That's such a good point. And I feel like in lots of professions, it's probably hard to do that. In teaching, you feel like it's a calling. So that can very easily become your identity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a teacher. That's why you need a hobby.
Yeah, going back to the very beginning. You don't need to go pick up some Madden if you want to pick up Madden.
Yeah, it's easy to be. I mean, teaching is even a persona. At school, you're Miss Something or Mr. Something or what, you know, you're not even your whole self all the time. So it's easy to make that your identity. Absolutely. And you're right. I think that the things that people value about us, there probably aren't even that thing that we do for, you know, 8 to 12 hours a day.
Yeah. And I think we get caught up in the idea that leadership happens just in the workplace, but I think we, you know, we lead in our household, we lead in our communities. Like, there's different ways of being able to lead in a way that makes sense to us.
Yes. I love it. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Arthur, for sharing your wisdom with us today and for chatting about Ted Lasso. I had a really good time.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much. And if anyone is interested, you can find me on Instagram. It's Arthur Aguirre MLO. So that's ArthurAguirreMLO. I share, obviously, it's a lot of that has to do with like mortgage loan officer stuff, but I do incorporate some leadership and communication in there. So by all means, please go over there and follow me on Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that, because I was going to ask you and then I scrolled down and I lost it. So I'm glad you remember.
Yeah, so please. And just like a little plug for myself, if anyone is interested in Texas purchasing or refinancing a home, you can also reach out to me there and I can help you out as well.
He's a man of many talents. All right. Thanks, Art.
Thank you so much.
I love chatting with Art. I love talking with him about leadership. I love talking with him about TV and movies because he knows a lot about it. But I really hope that you enjoyed that episode, even if you're not a Ted Lasso fan. Basically, we're talking about believing in people, believing in yourself, and you can make change happen at your schools. If you are looking for something to give you a good foundation, if you're feeling like you're floating around, you need some guidance, get the free jumpstart course that I'm offering. It's buzzingwithmissb.com/jumpstart. And it sends you like a 5-day mini course where it will help you figure out your what you believe about coaching, what your goals are, what your personal statement is, all of that stuff that can help you. If you're feeling like you're having a hard time finding the joy in your work, this is a really good place to start. So that's buzzingwithmissb.com/jumpstart. Next week, I am starting a new mini series. It is developing a coaching action plan. And so the first episode is a question I've gotten a million times, which is, what do you focus on at different times of the year for instructional coaching? And so I'm going to share some ideas. Of course, there's nothing set in stone because every school is different, but this is one way that you can approach it. And I'll give you some modifications. It's going to be your year-long guide to instructional coaching. That's coming out next week. And until then, happy coaching. Now that you've got so much to think about, head over to buzzingwithmissb.com to grab some free downloads, become a VIB, and check out the podcast show notes. Happy coaching!